Come on, Crumb. I haven't asked you for much in my life. I got your sword. That's right, the Riddle of Steel. I know all about it. Now, I must know about the Riddle of the Barbarian. Why they so good? Why the movie so good?
Alright, lights, camera, action. Now where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. With the Lethal Mullet Podcast!
Oh, get out. There you go.
Here we are. Come on, do it, Conan.
Yes, enough of that. I love it. Everyone can do the Arnie voice, can't they, folks? I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet. Folks, here we are, Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, ready to churn out what is going to be a hell of a podcast tonight. Looking at Conan the Barbarian, episode number 169. Well, I've got to tell you, folks, this is one of those films that really is a game changer, always was, always will be. And, of course, Conan the Barbarian is one of those characters that certainly my parents got me reading at a young age. You know, I was in my teens when I was given Robert E. Howard's omnibus edition of all of his work. You know, it didn't have Solomon Kane, didn't have Cull the Conqueror, but we certainly had lots of Conan, and it was an amazing book to read, you know, all these different stories. I mean, they're not novels as such. They're novellas and short stories, and, you know, it's that pulp fiction sort of thing that Robert E. Howard did well. You know, mad Texan, loves his guns and swords, and loves his Conan. You know, he certainly was an interesting writer, and I've read a lot about him, and I've got to say, he had a certain affinity for barbarians, and certainly when it came to John Milius cranking out this film, he certainly did an honour to Robert E. Howard, but it still at the same time took what was the soul of Conan and certainly put it into the mix. I mean, they've never been able to capture it since. Conan the Destroyer is Conan the Destroyer. It is what it is. It's very much a theatrical outing, probably closer to the Savage Sword of Conan comics in the Marvel run. I mean, and they're fun, don't get me wrong, but there's a soul. There's an affinity for the darkness that is in Conan the Barbarian that's you find in Westerns, you find in sci-fi. You know, it's as good as Star Wars. Conan the Barbarian is the fantasy version of Star Wars as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's clear good and bad. There's a character that, you know, is definitely straddling the line between light and dark. He knows what he's got to do, and it's an epic story. We have some amazing, you know, members of the cast in this too. You have Darth Vader, practically, in Thulsa Doom. The voice actor as well. You know, an epic character. It really is. And that's what makes this movie just one of the greats. I mean, it was shot in such a vivid manner. We're going to get into that tonight, folks. Of course, you know, I'd love to get your thoughts on this series. You know, we've had two other Conan films. We've had a TV show. We've had cartoons. We've had comics. We've had books. Conan's an interesting character. We wouldn't have He-Man if it wasn't for Conan. Although He-Man's a little bit, I guess, a little bit more child-friendly as far as, like, you know, the subject matter and stuff like that. But there's something about the darkness of the Hyborian Age, which is, of course, Conan's age, and it certainly is interesting, particularly the books that I've, you know, I've had. There's a big essay by Robert E. Howard at the start of this big omnibus edition. It's only a paperback edition, folks. It's an interesting one. It's kind of like an bound thing that looks like it should be a hardcover, but it's a soft cover edition. And it really literally goes through the ages. And I do believe it had some stuff about Cull and, of course, you know, he's from Atlantis, all that sort of stuff. But it went through and it explained the ages. And I think a little bit like, of course, J.R.R. Tolkien did with his Middle Earth. And, you know, I love both. I'm a big fan of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And I certainly love reading Lord of the Rings. I do once a year. It's like Dune. Frank Herbert's Dune. I've got to read once a year. You know, it's the stories that change every time you read them. Now, what I mean is that you get something out of them each time. Dune. I've read, well, almost every year since, you know, since probably 20 times, more longer, since I first read it in my, you know, early 20s. And what I love about the fact that is stories like that is that there's so many access points that you can hook yourself into. It really gets something out of. Multi-layered story, even, you know, whether even it was intended or not. That's what you get out of this. And it really is amazing, folks. As the same goes for Conan. The film itself, every time I watch it, it's like Blade Runner. There's something different than Milius was working on that really puts it on another pedestal as far as film. And none of the sequels or that reboot, as much as I like Momoa, and I certainly like Steve Lang in it too, it just isn't the same caliber, and it's certainly not there. At the end of the day, one of the coolest things about Conan is just how tough and ready they are, ready to go. So here we go.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Hey, Crom, are you there? Come on, tell me the news now. What is coming from the clouds?
Well, news is, folks, that I've got to tell you, this new home cinema that I've really, it's been years in the making, I've certainly been waiting for an inexpensive way to watch feature films at home on a decent-sized screen. And little did I know, I'd be able to do it for $70. Yeah, that's right. Big W here in Australia have been trying to give away, I mean, you may as well say it, give away projectors for a ridiculous cost. You know, these are things that usually are around about $200 mark, but they've got a brand new item that's coming in, hogging all the shelf space. So, you know, they said, you look, $70, mate. You can hang this projector. It's an old demo model, but you know what? She's still good, eh? And it's exactly what I've done, folks. I've picked up this great projector that is literally, I mean, it's a small size room. It's not a massive room, the home cinema. And of course, it's wall-to-wall DVDs, Blu-rays, folks. It is jam-packed. And of course, movie memorabilia all over the place. David, Star Wars, Batman, Dune. There's a whole Dune wall. You knew it, folks. It's going to happen when the Mullet Guild band's here. But the big thing about it is this, is that, you know, I'd never had a slide or something that I could put down, whether it's a screen, to really put this projector on. So I was like, do I get one? Hell yes, I get one, folks. And what I did was I found that one of the blinds I had was the perfect color, perfect material to project this stuff on. So, of course, last night I sat down and watched Conan the Barbarian for the first time, literally on a cinema screen. And, God, can I say it, folks? 5 out of 5. I'm going to give you the review right now. Conan the Barbarian is 5 out of 5. I mean, don't get it wrong. We'll go through it. But the Hallenbeck scale, it gets a whop-banging 5, mate. I tell you, it is fantastic. But also, watching some of these ones that I am now, I actually finally get to see the detail the directors were trying to put in the visual, you know, in the camera. You know, the sound's probably not the best yet. It's Bluetoothed into a massive speaker, but I am going to set up that room a little bit more closer to what I really want in cinema. But at the end of the day, the visuals are what is really getting there. And folks, yes, I'm going to be doing all the Chuck Norris pictures that went straight to video. Missing in action on the big screen, folks. Can you imagine?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And deep thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. Who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course, Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
Hi, this is Tom Caldwell from Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network, inviting you to check out our show. Once a month, we release an episode about the films of the great master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. You can find us on Facebook at Hitchcock Good Evening, on Twitter at Good Evening Pod, and along with myself and Brandon Shane Mutala and Chris Haig, we bring you a fun and friendly show that you can enjoy alongside your viewing of the films of Alfred Hitchcock. On behalf of the program, I wish you good evening.
Thanks, Tommy, me old mate down there, and of course, Canada. Yep, Canada. All right, folks, let's get into the pub.
Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy, D, you know?
Right, mate.
Just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage.
Here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
What is best in life, Conan? Well, I can tell you what best in life is listening to this here podcast, folks. That's right. And tonight, you know, we're looking at, of course, John Milius' 1982 classic, Conan the Barbarian. Alright, so this film I did not see till VHS. That's right, I was too young. It's now made by folks. In 1982, would let me go and see this film. I can tell you that much, folks. That's just not going to happen. But in the late 80s, I've got a copy of this on VHS, and I watched it, and I was like, wow. I literally was. I was like, wow, that's awesome. What? Who is that guy? What is this story? What's that? Hey, who is that character? What is this world? And of course, it sucked me right in. Of course, this is a stage where I was really... I knew who Arnold Schwarzenegger was. I knew who the Terminator was. I knew what the Commando was. But I didn't know a lot of his other films. And, you know, this is probably one of his best, folks. Got to say. He really put a lot into Conan. You know, let's just say he's not the greatest actor of the world. But what he does is honest. There's an honesty to his performance. There's unlike any of his contemporaries. I mean, you know, Sylvester Stallone's a fantastic actor. You know, in the meat and potatoes sort of action that he does. And so is Bruce Willis, and so is, you know, to a lesser extent, Jean-Claude Van Damme. And great actor is actually Dolph Lundgren as well. But, you know the fare that was coming through in, of course, the 1980s, and his action, and it's sort of very comic booky sort of action at the time. This is your Marvel movies of the 80s, pretty much, folks, you know. But when you look at this, this is something that's got more than that. You know, it is action, and it's certainly of that ilk of the fantasy films that were around at the time. You know, the sword and the stone sort of stuff, you know, Beastmaster, all that sort of stuff. You know, it was all very popular at the time. But Conan had something else. What it really had, for me, was a world that seemed real, like Star Wars did. You know, you watch Star Wars, it seemed believable. And so did this. You know, Conan the Barbarian looks like a real country or world, or whatever you call it, that had come before us. It's so believable. You know, the world, the characters, are so grounded that it feels like it's something that came before us. To a lesser extent, some of the other fantasy films around had done similar, and mainly due to budget and just the locations they chose, which are usually in the United States, they weren't in Europe. They could never capture what was captured on, you know, a film like this. You know, they were using locations that pretty much hadn't been used since, you know, spaghetti westerns, because it was done in Spain, majority of it. And that's what I love about this film. It's got vistas that you're just not going to see on those other films. You know, there's a long gestation to this project, and it certainly was one that probably didn't have Arnold Schwarzenegger in mind. But I tell you what, folks, it really is an epic. Now, it's not something, too, that follows the usual three-act structure of action, midpoint action scene, climax action. There's points of action throughout, but it's done well. It's done to the stage where it's unpredictably, you know, what it is, but it sort of follows also some really comedic beats as well. There's quite a bit of comedy in this. That's what sort of shocked me at first. You know, it's a coming-of-age story of a hero, but also a king, right? Because that's one thing that this character does, you know, and this is what's interesting about the film, folks. And one of the reasons I like it, it is like Dune. Now, you know, like you say, oh, Dune's got nothing to do with Conan, Adam. But no, it does. Think about it. Paul Atreides, same thing. It's coming of age story for him. Coming of age, but also what it is coming of age of an emperor of the known universe. In this case, the king of the known universe, Conan, as we see at the end of it. Of course, he's telling about his stories and where they would go and where they would lead, folks. That's what makes this character fascinating, but also, you know, one that you just keep coming back to, because it should have been an episodic series, should have been something that Arnold Schwarzenegger came back to, like the Bond movies, like Indiana Jones. But, you know, they came back once with Conan the Destroyer, and it wasn't what it should have been.
Please hang up and try again.
Now it's time for the Lethal Mullet Cafe, as we chill back, relax, and look at the trivia. All the detail, the nitty-gritty of the films we are celebrating.
We're getting into the film now, folks. I'm going to be chatting about what made it such a good one. Conan the Barbarian is a 1982 epic film. Fantasy film, sword and sorcery, sword and sandal. It's all of those things and more. Directed by John Milius and, of course, written by Milius and Oliver Stone. Based on, of course, Robert E. Howard's Conan. Of course, known mainly in the opening titles, the cast, Arnold Schwarzenegger as Conan and James Earl Jones as Thulsa Doom. And it is very much a clean-cut sort of good and bad when it comes down to who is in what areas and stuff like that, of good and evil and this. So Conan film's been basically on the charts since the 1970s, and producers Edward R. Pressman and Edward Summer were trying to get this made from about 75, and it's gone through a number of incarnations. And of course, eventually the project was sold to Dino De Laurentiis and, of course, Raffaella De Laurentiis, as you know, they basically were going to do some type of production at one stage there. But of course, they finally got Milius involved, and of course, with Milius as director, and they rewrote the script with, of course, Oliver Stone. They're on their way. And of course, one of the things that they wanted to bring in was ideas of the Seven Samurai from 1954, and of course, Quaidan from 1965 as well. The film was shot in Spain and different parts of Madrid, and also the province area of Almeria. And of course, Ron Cobb was one that really came about and got that real Hyborian age design happening. Originally, they had planned to get Frank Frazetta to come in and design the film, but they eventually, for whatever reason, didn't see eye to eye with Frank Frazetta. And of course, eventually, Ron Cobb came in and got this real dark age feel to everything. And it certainly looks like some of Frank Frazetta's work anyway, when it comes down to it. They were definitely after that sort of
idea. The many optical effects in this film, this is something that really is, you know, in camera still effects. You know, beasts and all that sort of stuff that they put in there too. Arnold Schwarzenegger himself put a lot into this film as far as, like, obviously stunt work and stuff like that too, which we'll talk about. And of course, the swords themselves that he had to learn how to use, and, you know, in some ways a little bit like Japanese fencing or kendo in this, or kenjutsu. Conan the Barbarian was released by Universal Pictures and also 20th Century Fox in some other areas. It's Fox out here in Australia, folks, so that just shows you. And it came out on March 16, 1982 in Spain, and of course, May 14, a couple of days earlier, in North America. Now, I didn't see it when it first came out, as I mentioned earlier, but I certainly been one that got it on VHS. And as much as I love that format, like I said, the best thing to do is now see it projected, just like I've set up in my own home cinema. I mean, if this film is like Gladiator, the vistas, the visuals, you need to see it on a big open landscape, folks. It really is that. Schwarzenegger really came to stardom with this film, and it certainly is one that, you know, really works to his strengths. You know, he's somebody that's got natural sense of humor, and he certainly has charisma in bounds, and it certainly set him up for things like The Terminator, and even this, the charisma in this he shows in films like Predator, and of course The Running Man, and many others as well too. Now, obviously, this is something that's been on home video, been on digital, been on Blu-ray, it's been on many different formats, some of them we'll talk about soon, and it's certainly a cult film. But, of course, it had a sequel that was lesser when it came to, I think it's thoughts by fans anyway. It's more a comic book movie, and there's, of course, Conan the Destroyer. It's certainly not thought of in the same ilk. And, of course, then in 2011... with Jason Momoa and, of course, Stephen Lang, we had a reboot called Conan the Barbarian in 3D, folks. All right, let's have a look at some of the other cast and, of course, some of the crew. Cinematography was by Duke Callahan, edited by C. Thomas O'Meara. Music by the late, great Basil Poledouris. Yes, the amazing Basil Poledouris. I mean, the things that Basil did was just amazing. You know, musically, it is one of those great soundtracks. I think it's better than a lot of the modern soundtracks, got to say, folks. Those massive horns at the start, everything is just amazing. Now, on a budget of $20 million US, it did 68.9 to 80 million box office. So, safe to say, it is a success. So, what is the movie about, folks? Well, it's about the Riddle of Steel.
Right.
So, at the start, we see a sword is being forged by a smithy. And, of course, this sword is then shown to the son of the smith, and that son being Conan. Of course, the father of Conan goes through the mythology, or, of course, the importance of what steel is. In this case, you know, the sword, it means power, it means everything. And, of course, he's a Sumerian. This is of the Sumerian culture, what they went through. And, you know, some stages, you know, this would be, you know, obviously a father and son talking about future, but also talking about their importance to where they are in life. And, of course, their situation with the world. And, of course, part of it is this mythology of the Riddle of Steel. You know, it's a riddle, all right, but the idea of the Riddle of Steel is something that will haunt and also protect Conan as he goes through his stories, because he obviously, it's not just in this film or this story itself, it's something that he will go through as he becomes a king down the line of the world. So the Sumerians are massacred by these raiders led by James Earl Jones' character Thulsa Doom. Thulsa Doom is this cult-like leader who has a massive army of what can only be described as Viking-like characters that are just huge. Conan's father here is one that's got, obviously, the sword, and in this case, this beautiful sword that's made at the start of the film, and he goes out and tries to defend his village, but he's mauled by these huge Rottweilers, these dogs. Then the sword is given to Thulsa Doom, and he does the one thing that really, to this day, is just horrible to watch each time. For me, because I watched it at such a young age that, you know, it still resonates with me when he decapitates Conan's mother, you know, decapitates, takes her head off with the same sword that his father built. What's grieves me about that is you don't see it on the screen, but it plays in your mind. So it's one of those, it shows the brutality of this world, you know, in some ways very much like Glory, which I think is an interesting film in the fact that it's not a lot of bloodshed, but when they do the bloodshed, it's at the start of the film to really set the tone, right? And that's what part of this is all about, really. So from here, the Sumerian kids, Conan's one of them, are sold and they put into slavery. And they put on this massive, huge windmill, if you like, or flattened out. And of course, it's called the Wheel of Pain. These are all the sorts of things you can expect from a Robert E. Howard story. And of course, they're chained to that wheel and they have to push this wheel for the rest of their life. Conan's one of the few that survive all the way through to becoming an adult. And of course, amazingly muscular adult. From here, a man frees him, but takes him into slavery again, this time turning him into a gladiator. And this is this great montage scene we see where, of course, he starts out as a very naive fighter and then, of course, becomes this huge, amazing gladiator and feared. And basically, they let him go completely wild as a gladiator, right to the point where, of course, he beats everyone in the West and the East. And then eventually his master frees him because he's too wild. After this, he's followed by a pack of wild dogs, almost wolf-like. And from here, he goes running wild all over the place. This is where he goes to an old Atlantean colony where he finds this tomb, a tomb of a warrior. Goes inside, and of course inside, this is where he finds the Sword of Crom. And it's a very, very old sword, old by his times. And, of course, from here, he starts to wander the world and gets through to try and find adventures for himself. And this is where he really gets into the Conan the Barbarian. You know, a lot of these newer films, folks, would have just stopped there. But, of course, he doesn't. Because he's Arnold Schwarzenegger. I have to have a big movie. Come on, do it. Let's go. Let's go. Come on. Oh, no, I lost myself. Where I'm going to go? I need to find the bad guys, come on. Okay, so basically what happens is he meets basically this huge, huge statue of Crom, gets the sword, and basically it sets him on a bit of a path, you know. It's like him picking up the lightsaber or Excalibur. From here, he meets a witch. And, of course, this is where he basically gets a bit of an idea about what he's got to do in life. Of course, from here, he follows the witch's ideas and, of course, meets, in the middle of this, Subutai. And Subutai is a thief and archer and becomes his best friend in the world. And, of course, his partner in crime. From here, they go to the city of Zamora and seek out Thulsa Doom. In the meantime, they find this female thief and brigand by the name of Valeria. As they all together try and get inside the Tower of the Serpent. This is basically all about snakes, folks, you know, in one way or another. Because Thulsa Doom's a snake at heart. Although I do believe Thulsa Doom as a character in the traditional mythology of Conan was actually more like a zombie or an undead character. Less about snakes and stuff like that too. So they go to Terror of the Serpent, and from here, they try and basically steal from it. And from here, they take out a massive snake, this huge snake. And, of course, part of what they're doing is that the people of this cult are sacrificing a princess in this, basically, or, you know, sacrificing people around that as well, who basically are fodder for the snake and, of course, those people. From here, he gets to know Valeria quite well, gets it on with Valeria, if you know what I mean. And then, of course, from here, Valeria, Subutai, and Conan then, of course, meet King Osric, played by, of course, Max von Sydow in a great role. There's such outrageousness! Outrageousness! Yes. That's what he says, folks. And basically he says, you need to rescue my daughter, Princess Yasmina, who's now basically a completely brain-dead zealot of Thulsa Doom's entire cult, the snake cult, whatever you want to call it. Subudai and Valeria don't want to take up the quest, but Conan hates Thulsa Doom for what has happened to his parents and, of course, wants complete and utter vengeance for their part. So from here, he goes off alone to the Temple of Set and, of course, the Mountain of Power. So, again, these sets are huge, folks. This is what is something that's great to rewatch, and particularly on a big, big screen, folks, is just how big these sets were. I mean, it's a quite an epic picture by itself, but still to see this is just amazing. So Conan, kind of almost like a spy, like a James Bond, gets done up as a priest and, of course, becomes one within the temple. And there's some great scenes. There's a scene where, of course, we have Arnold, you know, say, I like your robes. Can I talk to you over there? Of course, smashes the dude, takes his gear and becomes the priest. But he's captured by Thulsa Doom. And there's a great scene between James Earl Jones and, of course, the amazing Arnold Schwarzenegger, where they're talking almost like Star Wars-style mythology within this, you know, world of Conan. And I'm talking about, you know, the Riddle of Steel and talking about power and corruption. And, of course, even the fact that, you know, somebody like Thulsa Doom is so removed from the pain that he's caused people through the murders, the rapes, the killings, everything that he's done. You can see the amount of pain that this person's in. From here, Conan is then crucified on the Tree of Woe. And, of course, it's a classic scene which has been played a number of times. You know, it's very Jesus Christ in the way it's done. But also, I mean, this was copied by Jean-Claude Van Damme in Cyborg as well. Of course, he's crucified on a ship's sailing post. And pretty much the same idea. So from here, he's just about to die. But, of course, Subutai finds him. And then he's brought to Akiro. Now, Kiro, of course, played by Mako, is amazing. And Mako has obviously been an amazing actor over the years that we've all followed the work of, you know, and just a really, really exciting actor. He's always puts in 150% into his performances. He was an amazing actor. And, of course, leaves on this burial ground for warriors and kings. And, of course, he's the one that completely starts the film with that opening narration, and it does such an amazing job telling us about the days of a high adventure, you know, and really gets you into the film. But what I love about it too is that, you know, for every bit of magic that he does, or, you know, wizardry, there is a cost to mortality, you know, and heavy tolls and stuff like that. And one of those, of course, bringing Conan back from the dead, is that it will cost Valeria her life, and she's willing to pay it. So it's kind of the tragic romance of those two characters, and you know, two amazing characters. Subutai and Valeria then agree to help Conan once he's back to take on Osric's quest, and of course go to the room where, of course, Thulsa Doom has everybody there. It's a huge scene. It's a massive scene of just bodies, and, you know, it's part orgy, part party. It's everything. And Thulsa Doom turns into a snake. It's weird as hell, folks. And, of course, part of this is this massive fight that we see Sven-Olof Thorsen and a certain raider. Yes, Kevin the Raider Nerd Ransel. Guess what? There is a Oakland Raider in the cast. We're going to talk about that soon. But, of course, there's just all the warriors fighting each other. And, of course, we get to see Valeria and, of course, Subutai also fight, and, which is an amazing thing. We never get to see Thulsa Doom smacking swords with Conan, which is interesting, but would we want to see that? He's kind of more an Emperor Palpatine-like character. At the end of all this, after, of course, the passing of Valeria after some combat here too, Conan really puts his faith in himself, less about Crom, the god that is of his Sumerian people. Instead, not only does he go out by himself, he goes after Thulsa Doom and takes him out eventually. And, of course, then takes Princess Yasmina back to King Osric. In turn, he becomes like the king himself, a king of Sumeria and, of course, the Hyborian Age. It's an amazing, adventurous story, folks, and one that I've always enjoyed watching. Conan, and of course, the world, Hyboria, is all a creation of Robert E. Howard from the 1930s. And to read it now, folks, it's still just as gripping as it was, you know, back then, folks, you know. This Texan writer who did an amazing job, really just bringing the spirit of such a dark character in a dark world to us as fans and, of course, as, you know, people that read fantasy and stuff like that too. From the 1960s on, of course, he eventually got into Marvel Comics and became the Savage Sword of Conan. And, you know, there's some great, amazing stories that were put through there, and that's pretty much where I picked up my love of Conan, was through the comics. And, you know, obviously he's a little bit different. You know, these days it's run by Dark Horse as well. And there's, you know, the adaptations themselves by Marvel Comics. It must have been in the 70s. Sorry, I do correct myself there. But, you know, they just so beautiful. And the artwork was always, you know, amazing. You know, to me it's as captivating as The Phantom, which has been the longest-running thing I've collected. I've only stopped collecting it recently, to be honest, folks. You know, and, of course, through publications, if you're out there today listening to the podcast, again, I say a huge thanks to all of you out there that do such an amazing job bringing that to us. But, you know, it's an amazing thing, too. I mean, Conan does such an amazing job as a character in this story that it's more believable, you know, for us in this film than, say, a film like Conan the Destroyer. Now, obviously, how do you top this film? John Milius, you know, obviously did such an amazing thing itself too. And, you know, how do you capture that again? And that's one thing they really probably needed to look at the end of the day. So Valeria has obviously been a character that they looked at for this series. And, of course, she comes a namesake for the tale of Red Nails, of course, and she's a companion of Conan's in that as well. But also there's the Pirate Queen and Queen of the Black Coast, which has kind of more passing resemblance too as well. And there's others as well too. Obviously, Subutai has basically, I think, through Milius, of his love, of course, of military history. And, of course, he was Subutai was one of Genghis Khan's main generals too. And it's quite an amazing role because he sticks by Conan all the way through. Thulsa Doom is a creation of a number of characters under that name. And, of course, most of it comes from Thothanon. And Thothanon is a Stygian sorcerer from The Phoenix on the Sword. Now, these ones, I tell you, folks, I'm actually going to go back and start reading some of the Conan. After this rewatch on the cinema screen, it really got me wanting to read those stories again. And I haven't read them in quite a few years. So to get back into it, it's going to be a lot of fun. Thulsa Doom is actually a villain from Cull of Atlantis, as I mentioned earlier. You know, he's an amalgamation of the two in this one. And the other one, too, is something that viewers and critics that watch the movie thought that Thulsa Doom was also very Jim Jones-like, of course, the cult leader that basically got people to obey to his commands to commit suicide as well. And, of course, there's the Thuggy cult and the Hashishim as well, and ancient orders as well, all the way back too. That really, there's something around that too. Of course, you know, the development of this film, as we mentioned earlier, is something that's had an involvement for quite a few people. That's something that the producers have been trying to get going since the mid-1970s. You know, John Milius himself been wanting to put this, you know, and direct a film about it since 78. And, of course, you know, he'd been a big fan of films like The Vikings from back in 1958 as well. And, of course, you know, he's also got to wait for the right producer to come in and to help him out. Oliver Stone obviously came involved in the project, and this is when Paramount Pictures offered to put up $2.5 million to put it on there too. And of course, Ron Cobb was engaged to put some design work on that too. And this is where they started really looking around for the right director as well. And looks like Ridley Scott at one stage was asked, but didn't want to do it as well. I think mainly because Dino De Laurentiis was involved. You know, he worked with those guys as well, which is great too. And of course, one of the things is, you know, Milius is an interesting one because he's a military nut. You know, he loves his weapons. He loves, you know, anything barbaric. And so it really worked towards what would be the film that we saw. And I think he has a love, too, of definitely spaghetti westerns, folks, because it has that sort of landscape. Charlie Bronson, Sylvester Stallone, and William Smith, and even an ex-rugby player by the name of Jethro, were all up for the role of Conan at one stage, or at least the producers were interested in getting them involved, until they saw Pumping Iron, which is, of course, a documentary with Arnold Schwarzenegger going up for his many Olympias, if you like. Mr. Olympia, he was six times, I believe, if I remember right. Also, too, of course, Subotai, played by Jerry Lopez, who is a friend of John Milius and a champion surfer. A fantastic talent in this as well. Of course, Sandal Bergman as well, a dancer who I think, you know, through the many Milius fight scenes in this, used that ability to remember moves as a dancer to really get those things too. And I think it really, really worked as well. The biggest thing is Milius chose people because of the way they looked and, of course, you know, how they fit those roles as well. And what's interesting about Schwarzenegger is, of course, that he's, you know, it's his first real role, a lead role in a film as well. And that's what makes it very, very interesting too. For other ones, Sean Connery and John Huston were also in the running. And, of course, James Earl Jones and Maxwell Sydow actually got those roles that they're after as well. Can you imagine Sean Connery as Thulsa Doom? That would be interesting. And John Huston as King Osric. Interesting enough as well too. So we've got these, and of course we've got Mako, of course, playing, of course, the role he's very famous for in this film. And of course he plays it again later on in, of course, the amazing Conan the Destroyer. Folks, it is what it is. It's a great, fun little film if you do like your Conan, but it's not on the same path as this one, that's for sure. So Thulsa Doom had two chief lieutenants, Thorgrim and Rexor, each both amazing abilities of themselves. One you're going to know straight away for being one of Arnold's best buddies, of course. The other one is Ben Davidson, a former American, of course, NFL player who was with the Oakland Raiders. And, of course, he's got such a huge part in basically making a fearsome performance in front of Arnold Schwarzenegger. But I don't think Arnold was very, very scared. Was he now? Come on. Of course, Sven Ole Thorsen, the Danish bodybuilder, and, of course, karate master. People forget about his martial arts training. Yes, he's amazing. And of course, he's one that has always had a part to play when it comes down to everything too. So one of those things that, of course, parts of having Sven in this is that, you know, Arnold's got such big buddies. You know, it's great to sort of have them come in and play those sorts of roles too. It's great. Cassandra Garver played the witch in this. And again, she's quite imposing. For the short time that she has it, she's an extremely beautiful woman who obviously is a seductress in this, as well as the witch, and really sets, of course, things on the way when it comes down to it too. Valeri Gunesson played Osric's daughter, and, of course, Jorg Sands played the 9-year-old version of Conan. And Nadjuska played, of course, Conan's mother in this too. What a cast. The real amazing thing is the work that James Earl Jones did in this. You know, James Earl Jones had such charisma. You know, he got that opening scene where nobody says anything. It's all in the action of the actual play itself. You know, it's more theatrical than it is anything else. And it's done with such a firm, hard, you know, presence. But also there's a likable presence about Thulsa Doom too, which is part of what makes him gripping in sort of a cult member way or cult leader in this case too. And there's some great scenes, folks. Obviously, the opening is a great, huge drive into the Hyborian Age. Then we've got, of course, the great thief scenes with Arnold and, of course, Subutai. And there's lots of comedy there too. There's lots of laughs and, of course, with King Osric as well. Then as you keep moving through the film, we've got these, you know, real, you know, tests for the hero, the hero's journey, as we, you know, a lot of little hurdles put in front of Arnold, you know, to really push him. And, of course, you know, some real ones, the cost of lives in this as well. You know, nothing's off the table. Things, you know, it can cost Arnold's character, Conan, his life for this. And of course, I love the massive throne room scenes and stuff like that too. What really set this apart is that Arnold really drove this film, and it's sort of a precursor to what his career would end up being. Of course, with Arnold, you never know. This film is 5 out of 5 on, of course, the Hell and Back scale here at the Quinlan's Cantina Zone Lethal Mullet Podcast.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. But also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at. There, you can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.